Don't tear that tie. Pull those wedges.
Mr. Fairbanks, I shouldn't have said what I did. I'm sorry.
Apology unnecessary, but accepted.
I do wish you'd change your mind about coming with us, though. Ted was counting on you, and I'd feel better about it, too.
Nice try, but I should have recognized the approach.
You're impossible.
You better stop insulting people, Tarnowski. It's catchy.
So the little lady's picking up my habits, eh? She'll learn a lot more before I'm through.
Hope you've got heavier guns than that aboard.
I got guns big enough to knock down elephants.
Cordite shells, huh?
Grenades, too.
I've changed my mind. I think I'll go along. I want to hear you when you start screaming.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and this week we are going to be doing another fan challenge. Again with me today is Sam Stepanenko.
I'm the prehistoric one.
That's right. And Jeff Omega is also standing by.
There's this island that I came from. And, you also were from that island too. Oh, I guess it's not so unknown after all.
I was going to make that point. And of course, standing by as well is our resident carbonated drunk, Trish Cochlin.
Yep, I'm here. I'm the sloth. I think I was descended from them.
I had to use a carbonated drunk because that was one of those awesome autocorrects on one of our chats. And I'm like, you are forever going to be the carbonated drunk.
Exactly.
I have drank so much Coca-Cola today. Okay, we're going to be doing another fan challenge again from our friend Cade, who brought us the alligator people, which should have been a clear warning sign. About this movie. We're going to be talking about The Unknown Island from 1948, and the only thing unknown about it is the fact that most people probably don't know this movie exists, but everybody in the movie seems to know The Unknown Island exists. So
yeah, this one was, I'm not going to lie, probably one of the least enjoyable movies that I've watched for this podcast. A little bit, in a lot of ways, but that's good, because we can make it basically anything we do would make it better. So
I've got some wild ideas for this one.
Me too, actually.
You haven't been here as long as the rest of us. It's not the worst thing we've touched, not by a long shot.
No. And actually, I just watched the Popeye movie last week, and that probably is the worst movie I've seen. So,
oh man, you really, really need to go through our own library of movies that we've covered. Even that. That's not. I've rewatched Popeye.
Jeff, you haven't seen anything yet.
You're just dipping the toe into the deep end right now.
Yeah, it's been a while. Actually, I was saying to Leah when we were watching this movie, I was like, you know what? Probably this fan challenge came about because, and if this is the case, I would love to know. And if it's not, you know, why not? I'd also love to know. But probably my guess is that who suggested it watched just tons of movies on YouTube, like exhausted what you could watch on YouTube. And then they're like, out of all of the free movies I watched on YouTube, these are the ones that are not as bad as the other ones. Because the Unknown Island is absolutely the type of movie where if you buy 10 movies from a dollar store and you watch all of them and they all suck, The Unknown Island would be one that would like, oh, out of these 10 sucky movies, this one sucked the least.
Well, chances are you'll be able to find it in a bargain bin because it is a public domain movie, because when they filed the copyrights, they did it after they released the movie. Whoops. So you can find this on YouTube, barely. I mean, really, this is, for being public domain, it's hard to find. I couldn't even find a trailer, folks. No trailer today, because I couldn't find it. Granted, given the nature and the era of the, it probably would have been all music and big letters emblazoned on the screen. So those are so perfect for podcasts, after all.
And you know what? This is a movie that there was a couple small things that I really wanted to find out about just because they're so strange and I couldn't. One of which was, for such a cheap movie, for such a cheap looking movie, how was it in color? Because yeah, color would have been fairly expensive, and it's the first dinosaur movie in color.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, and movie classics was known for its low budget B movies, and the studio itself was only around for 3-4 years. I mean, they cranked out a bunch of movies, but every studio did in that era. For its short life, it had quite a few movies, and I'm going to have to go through and click on them one by one and see if maybe there are other insane movies like this.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, nobody in their right mind would think about remaking this movie. But if you, we are not in our right minds, and that's what's going to make this spectacular. I think we can probably go two ways with this. You can go, like, with, what was that movie? Zero Hour, that became Airplane, really farcical. And you could go in a much more bizarre adventure type of thing, throwing a little aspects of like Lost in there. It could be fun.
Man, and
you could still do both.
If you're more in the second camp, I think that some of our remake ideas are along the same path.
All right. But I think we're going to have a fun time remaking this. This is essentially, actually, Sam had put it best when we were chatting, and he had a combination idea. Sam, you remember what that was? You compared it to two movies.
Yeah, I compared it to two movies we've actually done, because it feels very King Kong-ish, with just a hint of the 1 million years BC, because of the cheesy dinosaurs and stuff. But they didn't use the Slurposaurs, which was a bit of a disappointment, because they could have maybe made it a little bit better.
My coworker, Rob, he always asked me, well, what are you doing this week? What are you doing this week? So I started telling him about this movie. I hadn't watched it yet. And he's like, oh, I don't think I've seen that one. And you know, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if we're going to get like lizards and animals thrust at each other, or if we're going to get like Harryhausen go motion type of effects, or if we're just going to get guys in rubber suits. We got guys in rubber suits. That's this movie.
There was a couple people I was reading online where they were saying, you know, it didn't hold up very well, but man, when I was a kid, those monsters gave me nightmares. And there is the one scene where all the T-Rexes are like slowly wobbling their way towards the people as they're shooting on them.
Yeah.
And they're all making this super, like, all the sounds that they're making are like,
I thought I was like watching like undead T-Rexes.
Like, yeah,
it was this, like, zombie dinosaurs.
It was like this, such this weird level of like uncanny valley that it felt super unnerving just for that one scene.
What I loved about it, as soon as I saw the T-Rexes, and Sam knows where I'm going with this, because I sent him a GIF of one of those guys in the inflatable T-Rex suits on a jet ski.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made me laugh.
Because that's what these made me remind me of. And the inflatable suits look better.
Yeah, they do. The arms on them, and just how awkward it was for them to walk. They were wobbly, as Jeff said. It was highly entertaining. Like, when I first started watching this movie, I'm like, oh man, this is going to be a fucking nightmare to make it all the way through.
Yeah.
But as I started to sort of embrace the cheesiness of it, I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I actually quite enjoyed it as well. But this is one of those monster movies where the real monster is man.
Yeah.
Rather than the monsters on the island. Although they do talk about an entire expedition with this other character of Fairbanks, who'd already been there and everybody died. So, you know, let's go get photos.
There's elements of King Kong to it as well. Like this very isolated island where these giant monsters exist, apparently.
Oh, for sure.
It's kind of like just in that Adventure Island genre where, like, there was just a period of time where there was a lot of movies about people finding, whether it's an island or a place in the deep Arctic or in the center of the Earth, where just it's wild and primitive and prehistoric.
Yeah, well, everybody and their dog was trying to do and capture the success of King Kong over and over again. So this was just another one of those movies that was clearly trying to capitalize on that trend.
Absolutely. One thing I think that, you know, it's a little bit the elephant in the room, but this is also one of those movies that doesn't really hold up well in terms of its treatment of women and also black people.
Yes. But
that's like, it was very of the time in like not a very good way in those ways.
No, that captain was this horrible, rapey misogynist who was really giving Caroline creepy eyes even before they even met. So you had a real good feeling like, okay, this is this. When these guys get together, this guy's going to be the creep through the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't realize, like, his entire crew is basically our slaves.
Yeah. Well, halfway through the movie, I was like, are all of those, is his whole crew slaves?
Except for that one dude. That one dude that gets blamed for the rest of the crew that's constantly committing a mutiny.
Like, honestly, watching through the whole thing, it's like, this guy is the least likable character and they're all slaves, so like, you know what, sure, like, you know, go for it, I don't blame you.
Yeah, exactly, leave that fucker on the island.
and he's just so arrogant too, where after they do try to do a mutiny, he gives them back their weapons, he's like, they're never going to try it again. I'm like, that's the optimal time to try it again, because you are definitely thinking they're not.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh yeah, they're going to try again. God.
Man.
I'm like, how did this ship even get out of port? If I would have had an interview with this captain, I would have been like, I'll get back to you. I'm going to try literally everybody else in this bar first before I go back to this island. And honestly, this guy had a photo of a dinosaur on the island. Like, he had the best cryptid photo ever that he could erode the coattails on for the rest of his life. He didn't need to go to the island. I mean, look how much mileage that one Sasquatch photo from like the 50s has gotten. Like, that dude would have been fine. He would have just opened up a merch store.
And it's so strange, just the setup of like, hey, me and my fiance want to go to this island. Have you heard of it? Yeah, actually, my first mate went there.
Well, wasn't it? It was Fairbanks. It was like that guy that they knew about.
Yeah.
And like the first date was like, this guy has kind of lost it. Like, I don't know. I kind of want to dig into like the first mate's job. Like, mm-hmm. I want to see how, like, I bet you 9/10 of the first mate's job is preventing the captain from raping people, preventing him from killing the crew. Like, he's just managing this guy 24/7, I bet.
I totally agree. Like, what a horrible job. Like, he's running the show. Captain's just making money off of the sweat and tears of these people, and he's tormenting them. He's so awful.
Some of the language that he uses too, it's like, ugh, like, there's not a, it's not like he's a good villain because he's so evil. It's like, it's uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah. He's not mustache twirling evil. He's just a dick.
Yeah.
He's just a dick.
I'm asking, we decided to leave today. You're not going to hunt.
It's a long swim back to Singapore. My ship may sail until I give the orders. And I ain't giving any orders till I take one of those monsters. Alive.
What? Alive?
All I've wanted is pictures, and I've got them.
So you got your pictures, and you're happy. But one of those animals is worth $1 million to me, and I ain't leaving till I get one.
Why, that's impossible.
If you and the girl want to stay on the ship till this is over, I'll send you back tonight.
Why can't you send her back now?
Because I can't spare any of the crew.
Well, oh, that's all right. I don't mind.
We're all set, Captain.
Now see that those men stick close with their ammunition. Fairbanks? Lead the way.
All right, let's get into the cast of this movie. The story and screenplay was by Robert T. Shannon, who wrote The Great Train Robbery, so there's that. He's also really good at ripping off King Kong and other books. Screenplay was by Jack Harvey, who wrote The Phantom of 42nd Street, and was directed by Jack Bernhard, who didn't have a lot of claim to fame, but he did do Gigantus, the Fire Monster. We might have to do that someday. Because how awesome is that?
I was thinking that it's really uncommon for the time for somebody to have made so little movies, especially the super, super low budget ones.
Mm.
Like, he only had, I think, 13 credits or something.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were all four movie classics. Like, if he was just doing B-movies, he getting any further than that, he would have actually had to make a good one first.
Yeah.
Ironically, it's one of, like, the crewmen that just shows up near the end of the movie and actually has dialogue and everything. You never see him for most of the movie, and he's got one of the best resumes on here. But this movie stars Virginia Gray, who plays Caroline Lane, and she was in The Black Zoo. That sounds cool. Philip Reed was Ted Osborne, and he was in the original Last of the Mohicans. May have to do that someday. Richard Denning was John Fairbanks, and he was in one of the episodes we covered. A real centennial for us, episode 100.
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes, he was, and we had reimagined Creature from the Black Lagoon during the time when they were still going to do that whole Dark Universe thing. So go check out our take on the Creature from the Black Lagoon. Phil Nazir was crewman Golab. I just wanted to mention him. He was in a movie called South Sea Sinner. Yeah, it's fun to say. South Sea Sinner. Barton McLean was Captain Tarnowski. He was a dick in this movie. But he actually has been in a good movie, The Maltese Falcon. So there you go.
Wow. Not only a good one, but one of the greats.
Yes. Dick Wessel was Sanderson, the first mate, who gets literally stabbed in the back in this movie. We actually have mentioned him before, though, way back in episode 190.
I completely missed that. This is one of those 300 credit ones. Fuck it.
That might have to be a t-shirt. Episode 190, Strangers on a Train.
Oh my, yes, that's...
I almost whipped by it, too, and I was like, I think we did that.
And yes, we did do that. Along with Throw Mama from the Train, yes. That was a fun one to do, considering we were doing a thriller to a comedy.
It was, yeah. It was a nice... Something unique we hadn't really done a whole heck of a lot of on this show. Dan White was crewman Edwards, and this guy's got a decent resume. He was in one of my favorite movies, Touch of Evil. That movie is just a work of art. I highly recommend watching Touch of Evil. He was also in, and just because this is a spectacular title, Jesse James Meets Frankenstein's Daughter.
Wow, talk about a mashup of minimal proportions.
Yeah.
That's one we need to redo just on the title alone.
Right?
I feel like the only way that you could twist that anymore is if it was Jesse James versus Blackenstein's Daughter. That would be... That's the only way that could get more ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's already 9/10 of the way there, and it exists already.
So, come on, guys. Ooh. Urge us to do this.
Yeah, Blackenstein's Werewolf Daughter. Let's just add on.
That's a great title by itself. Blackenstein's Werewolf Daughter.
Yeah, what if Frankenstein's daughter was just a normal person and gets get bitten by a werewolf? And I'm like, you've let me down. You were supposed to get killed and dismembered and then reassembled. I can't wait. We're going to have to do that. We will wait, though. Someday, I will jot that down in my little memory banks, and we will do Jesse James Meets Frankenstein's Daughter. Awesome. Okay, so we've got an explorer. He basically wants to get photographs of this island because he's got this one from somebody somewhere, because everybody knows about the unknown island, but nobody knows about the unknown island at the same time. So weird. So he wants to get more physical evidence, more photographs and film of the creatures on this island. I'm going to call them creatures because they don't really look like convincing dinosaurs.
Can we talk about the sloth?
You want to talk about the sloth? Okay.
A sloth that isn't really a sloth.
Yeah. For a sloth, yeah. It's highly motivated and active. I mean, sloths are herbivores, so I'm not sure why it's attacking things.
Well, and also, it looks like a gorilla.
And to be fair, when you brought this up to us, I was promised a sloth dinosaur fight, and I do not feel I was given one.
They said it was a sloth. We just have to take their word for it.
But I can say I'm an astronaut. It doesn't mean it's true.
The movie said it was a sloth, damn it. A giant sloth.
Like, I am currently looking at a toy, a vinyl toy of a giant sloth, like prehistoric, that sits on my shelf every day. They do not look the same.
Okay, that just makes me want to ask a whole lot of questions, but we're going to move on. There is a giant sloth, and there is a giant sloth dinosaur fight, but as Trish said, it doesn't quite deliver on the whole giant sloth dinosaur thing. Cade.
Not at all.
That's how I sold this to my crew. I sold this that way.
Lies.
Operating under inadequate information. It wasn't a lie. Jay didn't know.
That's right. I have not seen this.
I'm just angry.
So you say it was an unsatisfying fight.
Yeah, and it's sort of, like you say, you were operating under that, and I read stuff where they said sloth versus dinosaur. So, I mean, maybe it's, okay, maybe not lies, but fake news.
Well, to be fair, these weren't the most sinister or really overly threatening dinosaurs, at least the T-Rexes. They move very, very slowly, can't really move around. There was one when they were grenading them and one had fallen over. That actually was an accident when the dinosaur fell over because they were shooting these guys in rubber suits in the desert. Almost entirely, this movie was shot in a soundstage except for those scenes. So they had these guys in rubber suits in the desert shambling around, and this dude just fell over from heat exhaustion, and they left it in the movie. Yeah. Yeah, isn't that awesome? Wow. I mean, not awesome for the poor guy. I hope he lived. Oh, my.
That is the best thing I've heard about this movie.
Yeah, that is the best thing about this movie. Okay.
You know, honestly, though, those scenes where the T-Rexes are just shambling in the desert, because of the sound effects of the T-Rexes and the music and everything, it did have kind of an unnerving effect. I feel like it was that scene where I felt like if you were to remake those T-Rexes, but try to make them look like that, but as real as possible, it would be very creepy.
I'm telling you, zombie dinosaurs.
Well, see, I was thinking about this, and it's sort of like they've been isolated for so long on this island, but I mean, it's been like millions of years. So what you could have is like variations on dinosaurs if they've been allowed to evolve over time. So they don't have to look like what we think about. They could be new and unusual and different and weird.
Yeah, that's what they did with Peter Jackson's King Kong. It's like an awesome idea.
Yeah, I do agree with that, although I do have a wild solution to this island, but
Jurassic Park.
Nope. So basically, these guys are going to get the photographic evidence, and the captain's got his he's generally works safaris and things and brings back animals, so he supposedly has cages and stuff, and he wants to bring back one of these alive. That's the Kong story, so he can make his millions of dollars bringing back this thing that the world has never seen before. And that's really the movie, other than, you know, he's constantly trying to rape Caroline.
It's also ego. Like, I mean, he's been paid. I mean, Carol has said she'll pay him whatever he wants. So he's been given a lot of money. So there's really no need for him to make another load of money. He just wants his name on something that he's just discovered. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It is pure ego and need for fame. And also, apparently, jungle fever. Jungle. Got the jungle fever. I can't play the actual song because then, you know, we'll get flagged.
And to heck with getting flagged.
Flag it.
I do like how the entire second half of this movie is everyone saying, come on, let's get back to the ship. And then he's like, no, we don't leave until I says we leave. And then, you know, some other stuff happens. But that's pretty much the majority of the back half of the plot.
Yeah, as they kind of get separated and then the captain's kind of stuck with Caroline, who basically is trying to keep him from advancing on and has to placate them. It's like, all right, I'll leave with you. If you get me off this island, I will leave with you to that ship. And that was after the crew had hijacked the dinghies back to the boat. They were the smart ones.
Except they died.
They did die. They weren't that smart because they were obviously terrible people to be working on a ship. Because that's why the ship wasn't ashore, is because there was a major reef around it and they got smashed on the rocks. Yeah. That's like a good Friday night. Most people get smashed on the rocks.
Or not on the rocks. You can just have it just
straight up.
Clean.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah. Straight up. We're not talking about booze at all.
No. Well, I mean, and then there's booze. I like the game that Fairbanks is playing at the end. That was kind of a nice moment where he's like, I'll shoot the bottle, and if I can hit it, I'll drink it.
There was that. Now, we should talk about Fairbanks, because apparently he's been to this island before and lost everybody, and he's found drunk in the bar, and they basically Shanghai him onto the ship to as a guide. And he wasn't even going to go ashore, but he just hates the captain so much. I'm like, I'm going to go ashore just to watch you scream. I don't like the way he delivered the line, but it was an awesome line.
Yeah, oddly enough, Fairbanks is one of the best. He's the lead I liked the most. Like, even Ted, I don't like very much, but I love Fairbanks.
Yeah.
There's lots of great dialogue in this movie. Like, there's parts of this movie that are pure genius. One of my favorite lines is, and you wanted one as a pet. after it ate one of the crewmen. I'm like, that's genius.
Yeah, there's some pretty good stuff there. Now, like, Fairbanks goes along reluctantly, but as he sobers up, he's actually quite heroic and brave. And Philip Reed's character, Ted Osborne, he's constantly off getting photographs, and really, that's his whole attention's there. And him and Caroline are fiancés and are going to get married after this trip. But as his focus is more and more on this task of getting evidence from this island, Caroline's feeling more and more maligned by him and more drawn to the more heroic Fairbanks. And it does end with a, we're going to need to talk. I'm like, oh no, they ended it that way. After we get home, we're having a talk. I'm like, all right, you're getting your ass dumped, buddy.
Yeah, that was one other thing where I'm not a huge fan of the trope where it's like, show a woman with a guy where the guy is somebody who we're shown mistreats her in a way because you want her to fall for the rogue, and you kind of shape the story in a way where, like, it encourages, like, infidelity. It's like kind of this weird trope that exists. And most of the time,
he doesn't come off scummy so much as just really focused. Like, he does even threaten the captain when he witnesses some advances. He threatens to kill him if he sees it again. But for the most part, he's not really there to protect her. He's off in his own little world of study.
Well,
and it's not being there is what's destroying that relationship.
When you talk about infidelity, it's kind of funny because I don't really see it that, like, his infidelity is about ignoring her and her needs. Like, he's in a relationship with his photos and this mission. She is just someone else he knows.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Yeah, no, I had some thoughts about that and how to change that. One, to address what Jeff was saying there about their relationship or the lack of. I'm gender swapping it. I want her to be like an up-and-coming photojournalist, and he's financing this trip with an expectation that she's not buying into. Right? Like, he's interested in her, but she's not reciprocating at all. So they're not in a relationship. He just wants one.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks he might be able to buy that relationship.
Totally.
And, you know, that gives a good homage to the point where the captain says he's going to take Carol off the island. And he's like, you're all the same. Like, they think that he can just purchase her or offer her something, and then she's just his.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that gives the characters a little more depth, and it makes that whole triangle a little more palatable.
I also think nobody should know about the unknown islands. Like, if she's doing a story of something and he's the photographer and she's the reporter or whatever, maybe it's more of a film serial or whatever of transporting goods to foreign countries or some sort of piece. And it's the ship, you know, the classic storm, and then they get to this island.
Well, I was kind of thinking that, like, they mentioned that the island was initially discovered by Fairbanks during the war.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that if I was to remake it, a really strong point to start the movie would be to just shift the entire thing where they're going to Africa or something to get photos, because at that time, anything exotic would have been saleable. And the guy who they hire has interest in animal, like, he has interest in, like, capturing foreign animals and then selling them on the black market.
Mm-hmm.
And then the war breaks out after they've already left on their journey. And so they get caught up in a battle And then in the midst of that, you know, they discover the island in a similar way to how it's mentioned at the beginning of the movie. But if that's where you start the movie, it's much more exciting and I think would be cool.
Okay, I have something that's a good, this is going to build upon. Okay, movie starts. I kind of still want to make it period, but not that period. Let's say 60s into the 70s. And they've heard about, like, there's this legend of this lost crew from World War II. And this is where the investigation begins. They are tracking this ship of passengers and crew back to this island. And Fairbanks was a part of this. They get to the island, but they do find this island. And they get to the island, and they do find Fairbanks alive on the island. Now, a lot of time has passed, but not for Fairbanks. This part of what's weird about this island is time is kind of in a knot here. And it exists in all times, in all spaces. That's why there's dinosaurs in there. For Fairbanks, he may have only been there for 2 weeks, where it's been 30, 40 years later for the crew that just got there. You good with me so far?
Yeah, no, I love that idea. That was what I was kind of thinking is time. I had a bit of a thing about time, but I wasn't sure if it would work. But yeah, that's kind of where I was going. That's cool.
Yeah, and then
I was thinking that the whole thing, it screams Bermuda Triangle.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking that you could have it actually literally pop in and out of time, which is why nobody sort of knows about it, because it pops into time for a brief period of time. And then
it's never been charted because most of the time it's not there.
Yeah.
It's like the Lost Island.
Well, part of it is like that they do mention, even the captain says islands rise and sink all the time. And this is absolutely true. So if it exists in all times, in some times it doesn't exist anymore. And depending on your perception, it's either there or it's not, because this weird space is a knot in time and exists at all times. And then that's why you can have mutations and things like that as well. And we can really have some fun with that, where they find maybe like a fucking iPhone on the island and they're like, what the hell is this thing? Because nobody's from that era, this current time.
I like that idea, them finding these anachronisms as they're exploring.
Yeah.
And possibly even finding other encampments where people had landed. But
say they find the encampment, they don't find any people. They find evidence of higher technology from present day. But for them, they've been long dead.
Yeah, eaten or whatever the case may be. Yeah. No, I love that idea. It gives them the island a whole new sense of mystery.
Yeah. Imagine doing an archaeological dig and finding an iPhone.
And you know what I think would be really cool, too, is you have some of the things, because it doesn't exist in time, there's area around the island that also exists in kind of that bubble. So some of these people could have gotten stranded there because of like ancient creatures, giant creatures in the ocean surrounding the island that had destroyed their boats.
Oh, sure. We can really have some ramp it up and have some fun with it.
Oh, that's better than the reef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For destroying the dinghy.
The legend of like Charybdis or the sirens or those giant prehistoric sharks, the megalodons. Megalodons, thank you.
Yes, the bigs.
Yeah. Yeah. Like plesiosaurs and stuff.
Yeah.
It's cool. Marine reptiles don't get a lot of love in movies, strangely, because they're so cool.
Yeah, so if you manage to make it to island, there's a good reason why you're probably not leaving.
I was also wondering, like, you know, to further play on the idea, if there's something like, if you do try to leave, it's like you leave and then you show up somewhere else.
Yeah, well, I like
a way to explain the like ships in the middle of deserts and stuff, or like all people who have tried to leave the island.
Well, they could do that, or like just the thought of like, okay, now we've shown that time's in a weird knot here. If they do manage to leave, and I guess we should have them escape, but at what time? What era are they going to wind up landing in? So we have somebody, Fairbanks, if we still have him survive the film, and leaving with Ted and Caroline. So are they going to go back to his era in the 40s? Are they going to go back to their era in the, 60s and 70s? Or are they going to land somewhere else entirely?
If you wanted to do a super fun, like, Twilight Zone type ending or something, you have them leave, and they're able to sail back to shore, but they've been spat back in prehistoric times, and there's still dinosaurs everywhere.
I kind of love that.
Awesome idea.
I kind of love that.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, I do dig that. Yeah, But we could, like I said, because time's a little weird and evolution's going to be really funky on this island, we can do all sorts of fun stuff with it.
Totally.
And because of that, the mammals, and we can have all sorts of weird creatures as well as something a little more familiar with the dinosaurs and as homages to the original film. But if you're going to have an unknown island, let's make it always unknown. Like, just make it really strange to be there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Especially, like, the word unknown. Like, with the title The Unknown Island, like, it already has, a strange air about it. So, like, it really should be leaned into as much as possible. That's kind of why I was thinking, yeah, like, to initially set it during World War II, just, like, trying to have as many things earmarked as possible where it's like maybe some sort of urban myth that you've heard. There's all sorts of these weird stories we've heard about certain periods of time and that just get gone back to a lot in like the pulps.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's just lots of strangeness out there.
And you have the whole thing too. If you're doing World War II, you have like the Nazi occultists, so they obviously would be looking for this island.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that could be fun from the 70s perspective, and then suddenly Nazis show up.
Mm-hmm.
It's very Indiana Jones-ish. And
that would be cool. It's like Nazis have been stranded on the island.
And there'd be these weird bubbles of time, too. So you could even, where each of these edges are bumping into each other, you can have these really crazy and grotesque mutations as these things brush against the edges of these time bubbles, very much like maybe Annihilation as far as how those mutations could go, or The Endless as well.
And you could also go super nerdy with it as well, whereas most people think of like all dinosaurs happening at once, but different species are like millions and millions of years apart.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're depicted together, it's completely wrong, but it would be right in this movie, and you could point that out.
Totally, because, yeah, there would be no, you know, prehistoric mammals fighting with T-Rexes or, you know, Dimetrodons for that matter. Like, all of the dinosaurs are wrong, but that's like, you know, you could maybe even have a Brontosaurus in this movie, which isn't a real thing.
We need to have a giant sloth in there somehow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I have an idea for the giant sloth. So instead of it being a combative, it's like fighting with the dinosaurs, they use it to sort of keep them safe from the dinosaurs because it's going to be practiced at not being prey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you can still have that really cool visual of a giant sloth, but make it more useful to fulfilling the story.
And it would be like the battle version of a giant sloth, like evolved to protect itself against these crazy.
Yeah, you think sloths with those big claws and, you know, hanging out in trees and stuff. So just swatting at a dinosaur coming by.
I just have this visual in my head of that sort of that long, slow sloth movement of an arm coming out of a tree and grabbing a T-Rex by the back of the neck and just lifting it up. It's like, there's no battle. I'm just going to kill you.
That's
fun.
It's done. It's over. This is my territory. And the rest of the crew's like going, we're hanging with the sloth.
Yeah, I think that would be really fun.
Because the sloth wouldn't notice the tiny little humans, so.
No, and it would just like, what's funny is it would just like slowly kill the dinosaur, and they're like, oh, that's grotesque.
Yeah. No, we could have a lot of fun with that, and big insects, and it's going to be a whole lot of peril on this island, and we can have its own mystery as they're unlocking why this island is the way it is.
Yeah, it's almost starting to feel like we've done it again, where we've gone away from a theatrical format to a maxi series format, because there's a lot, we've added so much to it already that it feels like it's going to require more time to really
I think an hour and a half, 2 hours would fit this fine, but then again, I mean, once you're on that island, there's plenty of room for expansion if you wanted to take it into you know, that Lost in Space type of format of exploration or whatever. So
easy. Yeah, I think there's enough there that, I mean, I think it would just be, everything we've talked about is just such good, like, pulpy, popcorny fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I loved Kong of Skull Island when it came out. It was my favorite movie that year. And yeah, just something like, just more movies like that, I think would be really good right now.
Yeah,
I think
just a lot of people with guns running from a lot of things that are a lot bigger than them.
Yeah, just the kind of, like, strange intrigue kind of monster movie. But that said, there's enough stuff there that, you know, if it was popular, there's definitely room to, like, explore for a sequel.
Yeah, fair enough. I think maybe if we don't want to over exposition in the beginning, like, maybe not talk about the island, like, let the island itself be the mystery.
Yeah.
Like Jay was saying, is there, our character's a photojournalist, maybe covering the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of being like a financier, he's a colonel or a general in the military who's her escort.
That would be like Kong of Skull Island a bit too much, though. Because I think that
Well, we're ripping off Kong anyhow, so we might as well go whole hog.
Well, I was thinking like Fairbanks is from World War II. The idea of tracking this missing ship was kind of a cool story. But then again, that ship wouldn't be very heavily armed either. So I do kind of like another war, you know, Vietnam, than the juxtaposition of this lost ship, and it could just be myth within the military.
And it could also be another thing too. You have this sort of, what'd be funny is Fairbanks is from World War II and it's like called the Great War. And then he finds out these people are here covering another war, and you have him just dealing with the fact there's like, oh, it just never fucking ends, does it?
Oh, that really adds something to his character. I kind of like that.
It really does, yeah. I mean, we can still have the Nazis, and you can't even mention the fact that, yeah, somewhere else on the island there is a Nazi encampment, so we can still have that Indiana Jones-esque sort of nod to that style of adventure.
One thing I was just thinking, you could have them discover Fairbanks on the island having crashed there at World War II, or you could have Fairbanks and everyone like come into there being from the late 60s, and then when you start to like see like Nazis and other stuff, like you start to introduce like a time element into it. I'm not sure if story wise, like how that would affect how it would play out. But if you introduce them finding a guy right away who's from World War II, like that's really interesting. But yeah, what do you think?
Okay. Not bad. Okay. This is getting really weird. Fairbanks. Okay. When our crew of Caroline and Ted and Tarnowski get there in the 70s, we're going to say for Fairbanks, he's only been there a couple of weeks from his perception. Now, the Nazis who are pursuing him wound up on the island much earlier. So they're older, but they had come across the encampment from like the crew that was lost that came from the year 2000 and have all these high-tech weapons they have gotten from that encampment. So they have kind of embraced finding this technology that is anachronistic to them, but at the same time making them a bigger threat because of it.
Yeah, that would be fun.
That'd be fun. So if they actually have M16s from, because the M16 has been used for ever since the 60s up until fairly recently.
Yeah.
So they could have M16s, which would really baffle our people from the Vietnam War. It's like, well, how do they have these? These were made for our war, not for the war they were in.
Yeah, or a drone strike. Like, that would be, like, completely crazy for people from the 70s and the 40s.
That would be very, very crazy.
Yeah, that would be... Yeah, that'd be wild. I mean, maybe even the Nazis have been there so long that they've had kids on this island, but they're so well armed they've been able to take care of themselves.
You know what? That actually would be a really super interesting twist on, like, with a lot of island adventure movies, usually they go to the island and there's the whole idea of, like, the dangerous natives who are all, you know, fairly racist depictions of black people. But it would be a really interesting twist if you know, the dangerous natives on this island are like the third generation children of Nazis, of the people who are pursuing Fairbanks, who has only been there for 2 weeks.
I like that sort of juxtaposition. So, yeah, you get rid of that trope, or you turn that trope on its ear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that, actually, where the dangerous natives are transplants themselves.
Yeah.
I have an issue with the breeding, though, because, I mean, Nazi Germany probably did not have a lot of women in the military. You have to figure out how you'd make that work, right? I mean, certainly suspension of disbelief, you just sort of make it happen and ignore the biology of it.
But come on, what about Ilsa, the she-wolf of the SS?
That's an awful lot of breeding for one she-wolf. Do you have letters? Yeah.
Have you ever seen that movie? She was a slut.
I mean, you could have a thing where, like, you know, everyone who's come to the island at various different time periods have fallen victim to this tribe who... in their experience, like they've been on the island for the longest as like cognizant beings. So like they found a way to survive, but like they would take people prisoner and stuff who would become trapped on the island, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. I, I have an interesting take on how you could fix the World War II Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Is you have the World War II Nazis, and that you you have people from the future. So then you have like Nazis from now that are breeding with the old Nazis.
Well, they don't have to be Nazis. They could just be overthrown for survival purposes.
True. But I mean, I think that would be funny because it brings it around the fact that we just have more again.
That addresses the whole uncomfortableness of breeding women as slaves. Or that gets really icky and uncomfortable really quickly. Right? I mean, it does speak to how evil the Nazis are. So yeah, I guess it could work.
And it gets to the white supremacist. It gets to the white supremacist thing where there's women who feel like it's their duty to have pure white babies.
Yeah, that could work if we somehow brought.
I don't know if I want to go that uncomfortable with it, because I kind of want to keep it more of this very family friendly, like the Indiana Jones Nazis, where they're Nazis, they're the bad guys. Of course, mm-hmm. we need to hit Nazis.
Cartoon
it's
Nazis.
True. I want. Yeah, it's true.
Nazis.
Yeah, I want to keep the embrace the pulpiness of the adventure pulps of the time. Rather than getting into some really icky territory, because, you know, I don't want to have an R rating like Annihilation. We can have some cool visuals and stuff, but maybe we're overthinking the rest of it. Now, we can have some interest, do some stuff with Tarnowski, because we still need to keep him skeevy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe less rapey, but now that we have Nazis on the island, and maybe he's just out for self-preservation initially, he is trying for financial gain, that could still fly. If this was not a military ship and was more of a research ship tracking them, that makes a little more sense. As a military ship, he would probably want to fight.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
And I cast kind of thinking more along sort of just an asshole kind of casting. Like, I'll give you away with some of my casting. Is I cast Jeffrey Dean Morgan because I was kind of thinking that kind of character.
I almost did him. I actually crossed out his name, and then I did Colin Cunningham and crossed out his name, and and then I landed on Christopher Maloney. So
nice. Another good choice. But again, the same along those same lines. Yeah. That sort of just kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Character rather than like the slimy drunk.
But somebody who would maybe want to side with the side that's, if I'm going to survive this, maybe I'll help the Nazis and sell out these guys because they might have a better way off the island, or maybe they don't. Maybe he's going to play everybody against the middle and he's going to see how the fallout is.
Yeah, I like that concept. And, you know, we could sort of move towards slightly icky, whereas he's the one who suggests that maybe our Carol character could be the start of the next generation without saying, you know what, I'll bring you somebody where we can build a new race. And yeah, he sided with them because they're the most powerful, even though they're maybe not the most vital of people anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I like the idea of them just being old, like these old yet really well-equipped Nazis.
Yeah. I like the idea of them have been there for a long time. And maybe that's why they're not actively pursuing Fairbanks. Because he's just...
they just don't have the fucking energy?
Yeah, one guy, they don't have the energy.
Or they don't know he's there.
Or they don't know he's there, because they've been there so long, and for him, he hasn't been there very long.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even though they arrived at different time points, and the Nazis would have arrived after them, they got there first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they
I do like them being on the island.
Yeah, and they have, like, a fortified encampment, and that's how he found them, is because they have, like, smoke and all this sort of evidence of civilization. But when he gets there, he sees that it's a Nazi encampment. He sees this swastika over the encampment and goes, oh, no, geez, I can't get away from them kind of thing.
This works out really well because I made my Fairbanks black, so.
Yeah, me too.
Very heroic.
Yeah. I mean, it's sounds like a pretty fucking cool movie.
I know. We just... Cade gave us a piece of trash and we're polishing it up and now it's just it's like a trophy of a turd.
Mm-hmm. But in general, we need more jungle adventure movies like Kong of Skull Island, and we need more movies where there are cartoonish Nazis, because I think people are, you know, as many times where you can have a very evil Nazi as a villain, you know, go for it.
What's that? There's two of them now. I want to say it's Sky Pirate. No, that's not it. The Nazis that live on the moon.
Oh.
You know which one I'm talking about? Damn it. Why can't I remember it?
Iron something?
Yes, Iron Sky.
Yes.
Iron Sky. You know,
I like that crazy pulpiness. I think that's just fun, and I'm happy that movies like that are still being made. So
it's like the recent Wolfenstein game, video games as well.
Yeah,
where it's just like pulpy. I like the latest one. It takes place in like alternate 1960s where the Nazis are ruling stuff. So it's like 1960s advanced Nazis, and yeah, it's just interesting.
Yeah. Our movie's batshit crazy, but I just realized it's still not as crazy as the 25-minute Kung Fury and all of its timey-wimey bullshit. But yeah, we're going to have some fun with this one. Let's have some fun with our casting now. Trish, you want to start us off?
Yeah, so I went a different way with it because I thought, well, we'll just have some fun. I had mostly kind of like Eastern, like Samoan actors because I was like... this is just what we're doing, or like Polynesian or like Maori. But I started off with a kind of more of a comedy idea. So my Captain Tarnowski is Matt Berry, where he can do skeevy, but you're not completely upset by it.
I love that. But I love me a Matt Berry.
Love you, Matt Berry. And then for Fairbanks, I went a different way. You guys went black, but I went female because I thought that would add a whole new different dimension. And I went with Sophia Boutella because she essentially did that whole thing in a Star Trek movie where she was by herself on an island or a planet just hanging out and surviving. And then for Carol Lane, I went with Keisha Castle Hughes from Whale Rider. And then Ted Osborne, I went with Jemaine Clement. Nice. Sanderson, the first mate, is David Fain. Now, he's not that well known, but he's a New Zealand actor. He was the owner of the fish and chip shop in Short Poppies called Hook, Line, and Thinker, because he had a philosophy degree. And then I increased the one crewman who was trying to get them to mutiny. I wanted to kind of increase that role, like in my original idea. And I still kind of want a little, like, if there was going to be a mutiny, just have be a more rounded character. And I went with Cliff Curtis,
okay,
who was in Hobbs and Shaw. He was Hobbs's brother.
Yeah.
And for my director, I went with Karen Kusama, which is, I think, kind of works with some of our ideas because she... I mean, it didn't do well at the box office, but there are some good ideas there, which was Aeon Flux. And she's done other action movies like Girl Fight and a few other things. So I think it might work.
Aeon Flux wasn't her fault. That was the studio messing around.
It really was. But yeah, it didn't. It. But I still like what she had done with it. Like, it, to me, it was still an enjoyable movie, but I wasn't familiar with source material. So that kind of helped.
That does make a difference.
But yeah, that's where I landed on mine. I didn't cast a whole bunch, but I love what we're doing here. So, like, I could totally expand this cast list now.
Nice. Definitely a good cast. Jeff, you want to go next?
Yeah. So, I was thinking for Fairbanks, I was actually thinking of Common, just because he's really good, and he doesn't really act in tons of stuff, but he, like, wants to act in a lot of stuff and, like, petitions for it, but doesn't seem to get hired a lot. And, yeah, he's just a... I like him. Think it'd be fun for Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
And especially because we were talking about, I think, yeah, it would be great to juxtapose the whole thing with, like, with the Nazis and everything. Yeah, it would just be great.
Really dig that. I'm a big fan of Common as an actor. I loved him in Hell on Wheels, and I really enjoyed him in John Wick 2. He's really good at physical action as well.
Yeah, like, he would be a really good, like, action World War II hero kind of guy, I think.
I have to agree with you. I think that that's way better than my casting, but...
Well, I guess we'll see.
But... Oh, no, he's better.
Well, yeah, people should hire Common more.
I agree.
I was thinking for, I'm blanking on all of their names, but it was Caroline.
Yes.
Yeah. Caroline. Yeah, I was thinking for Caroline. I was just thinking, you know, with something super pulpy, I was actually thinking that Emma Stone would be really good because I've seen her in some pulpy stuff and she just has that, like, a really good energy for that kind of movie. I was really racking my brain for who I'd want for the super skeezy captain. And yeah, there's been a lot of people who I've been really, really thinking about. So yeah, so for the captain, I was thinking Vincent D'Onofrio. Because yeah, he's also a really good actor. And obviously with Daredevil, he can show that he can play a kind of, you know, stone cold kind of character. But also, if you've watched Law and Order Criminal Intent, he's also pretty manic. And I think he can play a villain pretty well. As ridiculous as he was in Men in Black... But yeah, I think he would be a fun choice for an evil captain. And if we were going to cast somebody as an evil Nazi, I can never remember his name, but the guy who was Baron von Strucker, very so briefly in Age of Ultron, who's also in King Kong, can never remember his name, but it's just a great German actor with a great, you know, he just feels like he could be a good cartoony Nazi villain.
Yeah, I didn't come up with the Nazi, so I have no Nazi casting right now. And I'm not going to say Christoph Waltz because, you know, that's been done to death.
Yeah, that poor guy, he's getting really typecast as the evil Nazi.
Yeah. Rene de German, I'm like, is he literally the only German actor ever?
Well, if we want to go older, I would go like people like Werner Herzog, who also acts.
Ooh, yes.
If all of our Nazis are going to be seniors, he's great because he's got such a creepy voice.
Yes. That's perfect, actually.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, okay, that's our Nazi.
Yeah. I mean, you could even have like some of our septuagenarians, like, oh my goodness, Patrick Stewart playing an older Nazi. Oh, what the heck is this?
This is like the cocoon of Nazis.
Yeah, I think lean right into it.
Ian McKellen? Yes.
Yeah, like have all these like really great older actors just chewing up the scenery as like really cartoony Nazis.
I mean, Ian McKellen from Apt People especially.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Those are very good. Like, I would like to watch that. Like, they would just know what they're doing. It sounds so fun.
I mean, Patrick Stewart played a poop, so I'm sure he'd have no problem playing a cartoon Nazi.
Exactly.
And, well, and he did play a skinhead in Green Room.
Exactly.
And have all of these actors in an action movie as well, with giant dinosaurs and giant sloths and stuff. It's too good.
Good casting, Sam.
And now that they think of it, when you're putting all these older men in there, there has to be a joke about them being dinosaurs as well.
Of course. So they find the Nazi encampment and it was like, oh, they're really old. I don't think they're going to be a problem. Until like
then they have drones.
And then they have drones and sidewinders and... too funny.
Kind of loving this.
What else you got?
Oh, that was the only casting that I was thinking of, because I didn't dive into it too much because I figured that we were going to be going completely off the hog with this one.
And
I
think you were correct. Do you have a director in mind?
Oh, you know what? Yes, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be fun and interesting if it would be Larry Fong's directorial debut. Because Larry Fong, he's the cinematographer for Zack Snyder on the majority of his projects, and he also shot Kong of Skull Island. And yet, his cinematography for Zack Snyder's movies is just amazing. And the stuff that he did with Kong of Skull Island was also like very incredible, like very beautiful looking movies with really intense color palettes. And I think that obviously he has an interest in pulp material because he's worked with Zack Snyder for almost his whole career, and he did Kong of Skull Island. So this would be a really cool, I think, first project for someone like Larry Fong, where, you know, you could back a director who hasn't really done a lot yet, because I think we need a little bit more of that in Hollywood right now.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good choice. Okay, Sam.
Okay, so as usual, we cast based on the original character list, because it always changes, but I think my casting still works really well with what we've done. So for my Carol Lane, because I wanted her to be a stronger character and more of a central figure rather than just being sort of the damsel in distress.
Oh, for sure.
I cast Catherine Winnick, who is Lagerda in Vikings. She's also in that Netflix show about the martial arts god thing.
Was that the Wu Assassins?
Yes, that's the one.
Okay.
She produces that, actually.
Oh.
But yeah, I just really think that she'd be really great in that role. And she also kind of has that sort of same elegant look that the original actress did. Mm-hmm. She's very, like, she has those sort of those classic features. I'm like, that worked really well for me. And I would buy her as a photojournalist as well. So that's kind of why I went with her.
Cool.
For my Ted Osborne, who now is because I had done the role flip there. I went with John Hamm. I think he'd be really great as sort of a smarmy military officer. And sort of this sort of, I'm in love with this person, but it's not really being reciprocated. I think that he'd have a lot of fun with that.
This tall, handsome guy who's used to getting his way. And he's like, why is this not working?
Yeah, that's great casting.
Yeah. So for my John Fairbanks, I was kind of looking for like the ruggedly sort of adventurer type. And I thought, you know, and I mean, I've used him before, but I still think he'd be really great in this role as Aaron Paul.
I actually thought about him for a little bit. I didn't wind up using him, but I thought he would be a good Fairbanks.
Yeah. And so I did go that way. I was a little bit lazy with that one. I had a little less time than usual to do my casting. So and he was the last one I cast. I've already mentioned my Captain Tarnowski is Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah, he was the first one that popped in my brain, and then I wound up using somebody else from Walking Dead, so I'm like, well, I can't use two, so that's they crossed him off my list. Yeah. But that was the guy I literally had first cast, and then didn't wind up in my cast.
Ironically. For my Sanderson, the first mate, I actually cast Gwendolyn Christie.
I love that.
I thought she'd be a really great foil to the Captain Tarnowski character, because she's just so great at playing sort of no-nonsense. And then for my Edwards, because those were the only only people with real speaking roles anyhow, I cast John Hawks from Deadwood and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I kind of liked him because he's a really great contrast to actors like Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Gwendolyn Christie, because he's kind of a smaller, slighter, slightly weaselly-looking man. I thought that would be an interesting visual contrast, and he's such a good actor. And we've cast some of our Nazis. And then for my director, I think actually, ironically, this works out really well. I actually decided to go with Tommy Wirkola. Wirkola, the director of Dead Snow and Dead Snow 2.
Oh, nice.
On theme.
Yes. Yeah. Coincidentally, but I like the idea of somebody who just sort of has a sort of a foot in the sort of horror, action, and comedy genre, because that kind of left me some breathing room, depending on which way we went. And we went right down the middle of that. So I'm happy.
Nice. No, it seems like our casts are still meshing with their ideas. So we always come up with our casts long before our ideas.
Yes. Yeah. But just to go back, I would, if Jeff hadn't mentioned Common, I should have, because I think that he's actually a better idea just in general for Fairbanks. I think that he'd be really awesome in that type of role.
Right. And it made me think of something like when you cast him in there, is there was like a whole infantry of just like all black soldiers of World War II. I was looking at, I think it's the Tuskegee Airmen. Mm-hmm. So it would be interesting, like he's the last one left, or he got separated from his group. But yeah, it totally works in that whole era.
Yeah. Oh, there was a lot of African Americans.
Yeah, but it was all about them being separated too. And it would be interesting also to look at how they were viewed in the Vietnam War when Fairbanks is talking to the current people.
Yeah, I'd love to see him going, you know what, nothing's fucking changed.
Right? Yeah.
Even like we're still at war and you're still treating black people like shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lessons.
Yes.
All right, let's get into some of mine here. I just stuck with the principles, and there's some cast that we've all kind of agreed on now. For my Caroline, I went with Nadia Hilker. You can currently see her on the seasons 9 and 10 of Walking Dead, but she was in a movie I covered for 31 Days of Horror that I loved, and it was called Spring. Very talented actress. Check out that movie. It was one of her earlier works. And I think it would be fun to put her in a period piece. Like initially when I conceived of this, I still kept it in 1948, but since in the discussion this has all progressed, but you know, she can play in any era, that would be fine. For my Osborne, the fiance, I went with Ben Aldridge from Fleabag and Pennyworth. He plays Thomas Wayne on Pennyworth, and he's already got that look. So that period look, that's what I kind of dug about him. I'm like, oh, he fits the period. But mainly because I'm watching him in a period show. So for Fairbanks, I went with David Diggs, currently on the new Snowpiercer TV series. And I really liked this is probably the first place I saw him in, was Velvet Buzzsaw. I really liked him in that movie. So I thought he'd be, there's a good chance to give him a more of a lead role in this film. I mean, I think he's the lead in Snowpiercer as well, but I haven't started watching those yet. But I will, and I'll probably talk about it nonstop because I do love the Snowpiercer films and comics.
And I think we have to add a musical element because I believe he was in Hamilton.
Oh, yes, he was. Yeah, Hamilton, which is, by the time you hear this, will be on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sponsor us, Disney. and for Sanderson, the first mate, I went with, just because I needed a lost connection and a lovable one at that. So I went with George Garcia as Sanderson, nice. The first mate. So his character is probably going to change just because of it's Hurley. Mm-hmm. But I'm okay with that because I need more George Garcia in my life because he's a lot of fun. And as I said before, I went with Christopher Maloney from Happy in the Captain Tarnowski role. And for my director, I went with... he doesn't have a lot of stuff under his belt as a director, but unlike a lot of people, I'm a big fan of Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, so I went with Cary Conran, being that he very much can do pulp films.
Yeah.
That is my cast.
And as much flack as Sky Captain gets, it was like the first green screen movie. Like, I think 300 came out first, but Sky Captain was being worked on before 300 was, so he's like a, you know, a pioneer.
Yeah, I mean, Sky Captain is a serial movie, and honestly, I think it would have worked better if you were just done it in like 15-minute chunks in front of all the movie releases from that studio that year. I feel like Indiana Jones should have been released that way too, like, or even Star Wars. Like, it would have been so much fun, something to drive you to all these other movies as well. I'm not sure why the movie serial went away, because it's a good way to get people to go to multiple movies, maybe movies they didn't always want to see, just so they could see the next chapter, right? And then you don't release it on video as a full film until it's run its course in the theater and all its serials. So it has a long turnaround as well.
That's a great idea. And with everything happening around, we'll bring that back with the drive-ins. That would be the dream.
Yeah, man. Yeah, this would make our version here would make a great drive-in movie.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I'm actually loving that drive-ins are coming back, too. There's one in High River, not far from where we all record, that's supposed to be opening up soon.
Yes.
I'd heard about that, but I didn't hear how far along it was. Do they have a date when they might open it?
Last I looked, it was supposed to be end of July.
Nice.
Cool. Get some end of the summer drive-in action yet.
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome. Okay, well, we got our cast in here, and we've really had a lot of fun remaking The Unknown Island. Any last thoughts about it?
Watch it. I mean, it's a bit of a slog for the first 40 minutes, but the last half is just so beautifully entertaining if you just lean into how campy it is.
Yeah.
And and we didn't talk about the acting. The acting in this really not very good movie is quite good.
It's pretty decent for its B level. Sometimes, like, the performances feel like, maybe I would have delivered that differently, but it's not never delivered badly, you know? The lines aren't delivered badly, it just, maybe I would have done it a different way, but, you know, that's my inner director nitpicking.
Yeah, and well, I'm just saying, that's probably the director more than the actors
I would agree with that as well.
But yeah, I like I said, when I started watching it, I texted you, and I joked about about something being the only good thing in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got to the end, I'm like, oh, no, I'm glad I watched this, even though it was not a good movie.
And you can see this free on YouTube right now. It's about the only place I could find it. I thought I'd be able to find it on Tubi and Amazon Prime, but nope. It's for being public domain, it's still kind of difficult to find, but it is there on YouTube.
You can also find it on Internet Archives.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, of course, being public domain.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the beginning of the episode here, we were talking about it being shot in color, and I had an answer for that. This was the first movie that was filmed, or one of the first movies that was filmed with a new color process. It was a two-strip color process, which is why the colors wash out and change throughout the movie, because it was inconsistent. And it was delivered in direct competition with Technicolor's three-strip color process, which was still kind of still under development. So they were trying to sort of beat Technicolor to the punch. But it was cheap because you didn't have to have special cameras. Right. So it only cost a little bit more to go color, so they did.
Right, and being a full-color movie in the black and white era probably would have been a big draw at the time. Been like, you know, 3D was for a little while.
Totally.
Yeah. Just this new gimmick. I mean, just like sound was at one point. But I never did find any numbers for this movie. IMDb rates it a 5.2 out of 10, which is actually probably pretty decent. There is no critic score for Rotten Tomatoes, but it did have an audience score. Anybody want to take a stab at this?
I think I saw it already, I'll abstain.
Okay, I'll let you see if you remember at the end here. Okay. Jeff, what do you think?
I can't imagine it's very high. I would say maybe a generous 21.
Okay. Trish?
Okay, this is like audience now, Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. I'm wondering if this has any cult following to it, because that would change my answer. I'm going to go wild blue sky cult following 72%.
You're right. There is a 2 in there.
There is, but it's at the beginning. Jeff was closer, I think, if I remember correctly. I think it was like 29%.
Oh, no. Sam has no clue whatsoever, apparently. 29 is being generous. It had a whopping 12% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes from an audience score. You know,
I think maybe it was Metacritic I saw, because I did see a 20.
Oh, maybe Metacritic, yeah. But for Rotten Tomatoes, it was 12% audience score. So I'm guessing the one person who bothered to review it on Rotten Tomatoes did not like it. But I didn't see how many ratings it actually did acquire during the time. But when I see scores like that, I'm like, it's one or two people who hated it. I think 5.2 is pretty generous for IMDb. It's fun. Oh yeah, no, it's fun. I'd give it maybe a 45.
Yeah, I'm with you around there. Like I said, if you go in with the once you sort of accept the fact that it's not going to be a good movie and lean into it, it's fun.
If it had the budget to get a Ray Harryhausen in there, I would have enjoyed the shit out of this movie a whole lot more. But when the guys in suits came in, I'm like, it's going to be one of those. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
But it does loosen you up, too.
Yeah. I think part of the problem with this movie is the lead-in is really long.
It is. Like it's about 40 minutes before they even get to the island.
Yeah,
and the movie is only an hour and 12 minutes, guys.
Yeah, it's 72 minutes.
Yeah, it's a bit of a slog getting up to the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably the biggest failing of the film. And I think we've fixed a lot of that by kind of speeding up and making more happen on the island.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You really can just open up on the ship. You don't need to go to the bar and have him fucking around in there.
That was the exact thing I said to Amelia. I was like, you know what? When you're on a ship, you need to travel from one destination to another, and all you have to do is wait. So just shift your exposition onto the ship, and you already have a better movie.
Yep.
Yeah. And that brings another comparison. They sort of another thing they borrowed from quite heavily, actually, and I should have caught this earlier, is that whole opening scene feels like they were trying to rip off Casablanca, almost.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that, but yeah, that's entirely possible, actually.
Yeah, because it felt like they were trying for that kind of feel for it, at least.
Yeah, just more ass grabbing.
Yes.
And slaves.
And more slaves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh dear.
I will say one thing. They didn't do white people as the Malaysian people. They did use Malaysian actors. It doesn't make it better, but it is something notable.
Yeah, it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, especially in the late 40s when most movies would have just gone with a white cast and told you they were Malaysian.
Given that it's a small budget, small studio, they were probably paid a lot less than normal actors. They were like, "Oh, run this way, run that way, and here's your $5."
And you use your when you go into the IMDb, like that one crewman who gets knocked out when they steal the boat. He's got a credit. Like, he's very highly credited, but there's people who've been in the movie a lot longer than him, and they're not anywhere to be found.
Yeah, yeah, no. All those extras, none of them were credited. Golab was the only one of the native people that were working on the ship, and then there was the white first mate and the white crewman, Edwards, have lines. That's it. And all those other crew guys don't get credit. But that's also typical of 40s and 50s movies. Usually the extras weren't getting screen credits because they were running them at the beginning of the film. But it doesn't make it right either.
Well, and it was. But the thing is, like, some of them weren't just extras. Like, they talked to Kolba. So they had lines.
That's true. They were lines. And at that point, that's a featured actor, so if you have a line, so they should have been getting screen credits, at least under the current union guidelines, but it is what it is. And I'm glad they were casting the right people in those parts, but I'm almost certain they didn't get paid very well for it.
No, there's a certain truth to that. Yes.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a win and a miss there at the same time.
Yeah, more than likely it was just this tale they got to tell their grandkids. I was in this weird movie one time.
Yeah.
They didn't even have good craft services.
Like, I was listening to Arnold Schwarzenegger's autobiography, and it's just like, you know, there was a certain time where just being in a movie was enough.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That was the time. But Arnold was in some good stuff. Oh, at least yeah. that made yeah. some money. I don't know if it was good, but it made money. All right. Well, thank you, Cade, for your recommendation of The Unknown Island. And after this and The Alligator People, what is wrong with you? Are you okay? Are you okay? Do you need me to call somebody?
He's okay.
Yeah, I don't know, but thank you. Maybe.
Well, it gave me an idea, and there's the only other thing: it's whether to recommend to watch it or not. What I recommend is people watch it, and then what I want you to do is go out and like cosplay the bad dinosaurs, but with those inflatable ones, oh, like yeah. in the park.
Oh yeah.
And just have fun with that.
Oh yeah.
You can bleed sloth. And just enjoy yourselves.
Absolutely. We could remake this whole movie with those things, and it'll still look better.
With your iPhones.
Yes, with your Android. iPhones. Please do this. Send us that material. Oh, my God. That would be great. All right. Well, thank you, Cade, because you clearly understand that I like weird shit, and this falls in that category. So thank you very much for this. And if you have your own fan challenges, please send them in. You can ask us in a ton of different places on our social media, at Invasion Remake, on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake, on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you want to send us a longer form email. And, you know, make sure you tell us where to find the movie you want us to do and justify why you think it's something worthy of a remake. Really, all Cade had to do was tell me Sloth versus Dinosaur, and he snowballed me. That was... just pulled the wool over my eyes and just telling me what I want to hear. He totally clickbaited me.
Yeah, but this is exactly the kind of movie we like to do, because it's not good. It's not. But mm-hmm. it gave us a wealth of material to work with and really...
Yeah, look what we came up with. And we did it fast.
We really did. And that this is what we do. This is. I'd rather do something like this rather than something like Cuckoo's Nest, which... I still will never live down, but where we have something that had a little sense of fun that we can make really something new and unique out of it that maybe hasn't been done before.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're looking for those beautiful, beautiful car crashes.
Yeah. We got another one coming up in a couple of weeks. So keep those recommendations coming. This is, I mean, 2020 sucks, but it's been great for us because you guys have been participating and sending in some recommendations. And we're really digging what you're laying down here. So keep them coming. And if we like what you have recommended and challenged us to do, then it might be a future episode. And you'll get a shout out on the episode for sure. I don't know if Cade sends me another one of these. We may have to ring him in here and have him justify this over the phone. Like, what's happening here? Did you dive into the pills again? Like, what's going on?
But very likely just...
What did your parents do to you?
He's got a wealth of weird old movies, and I totally dig it.
Possibly very cheap. Just only getting the movies for as either little money as possible or for free on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, five movies for a dollar at the dollar store in one convenient slim case. Amazing.
Yeah, I want to know. I really want to know about his movie archaeological process. This would be very interesting.
Right. Yeah, he must have bought one of those 100 movies for $10.
Yep.
Or he just loves weird film. And you know, we're not hacking on you, Cade. We're just really curious.
We're like hacking on him a little bit.
Well, you're hacking on him a little bit. I like Cade. Cade's giving us some fun stuff.
I love Cade. What are you talking about? I this is just friendly ribbing. Friendly ribbing.
Yeah. We make fun of you yeah. because we love you.
Yeah, trust me. I mean, the guy who, well, one of my friends who had recommended Meet the Feebles, I told him to fuck off right on the air.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
So, Kate's getting off light. He hasn't told us to remake Puppets. Well, I guess he kind of did.
He hasn't told us to remake Hard Rock Zombies.
Right.
There was no crying. I did no crying halfway through, lamenting that it wasn't over yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've had some, we've definitely had some bizarre and really tough ones, especially early on with some of those fan challenges. Make sure you tell the your friends and family about the show, especially crazy episodes like this, and tell them where to find it. We're in a ton of different places. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, even frickin' YouTube. You can find us on our central hub and our host sites, invasiontheremake.libsyn.com. And we also have our Wix site. Sam, give them that address.
That would be invasiontheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And oh my God, we have an announcement for you guys. We have an announcement. Sam has been collaborating with myself, but mainly Sam doing most of the heavy lifting. We have merch. We have merch. Our t-shirt store is now open over on TeePublic. And right now we have 10 designs, maybe more by the time you hear this, but we'll have 10 designs up at launch and lots more coming because somewhere there's a list of all sorts of ideas we've had over the last 5 years. So if there's
there are random pages in my books.
So if there was one in particular from an episode going, when is that fucking t-shirt coming? Maybe you should remind me of it on my social media because I may have forgotten about it. But there's some wicked designs. We got three different designs for I Survived 31 Days of Horror, and Sam did an awesome job on those and let me collaborate on a few of them. I guess it was kind of my idea, and then I just said, hey, this is the idea, do something.
That was pretty much it.
we did kind of co-nitpick on the first one, and after that they all fell together. Hey, you know that guy you saw in that thing that one time? That's a t-shirt. You can now be that person that was in that thing that one time. We made it person, so it's a little more unisex. But you can be that person who was in that thing that one time. Let everybody know how famous you are with that t-shirt. And of course, we got our classic logo on there as well. And you can even get some face masks now for this current crisis. And if you're still in lockdown and like our friends in the United States unfortunately are seeing a rise again, wear those face masks and crush that curve and look good doing it by wearing an Invasion of the Remake mask. And you can also get those on TeePublic as well. Stickers and mugs and totes and all sorts of cool stuff. So check it out. TeePublic. Support your favorite podcast while doing so and looking great doing it.
Damn right.
Yeah,
and I gotta go buy myself my own product.
You do. And, but I say, like, the TeePublic t-shirts, I've bought a few of them off of TeePublic, and, like, they're some good quality shirts. They're wonderful.
Well, I am looking forward to getting mine as well. Because I don't get any comps, so I have to, like, we set it up, and I gotta order my own. But I'm so happy with these designs, I can't wait to grab a few of these myself.
And watch for them when they go on sale, because they will go on sale. TeePublic does do regular sales, and they may even be on sale when you hear this, but certainly at launch they're always on sale. Mm-hmm. As we add new designs, we will let you know so that you can get them at the launch price.
Yeah, so you want to really watch our social media, because we will post those items on our social media and let you know when those sales are happening, and you can rock some awesome invasion wear. All right, well, that was The Unknown Island from 1948. We had a lot of fun remaking this. It was, I don't know if it was a great movie, but I think we came up with something pretty great. I want to see it. I totally want to see it. Maybe that's just my ego talking, but I think we did good, guys.
I think we did. I'm sorry. I sold myself when I went with Werner Herzog, Ian McKellen, and Patrick Stewart as septuagenarian Nazis. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Stroke of genius. Love absolutely. It. Love it. Love it.
So good. So good. All right. We're going to be back next week with a comparison episode followed by another fan challenge. Until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I always return as Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
Well, like to know. We'll be underway in a minute.
Good.
Carol, you've been pretty wonderful through all this. We get back to Singapore, we'll...
We'll have a few things to settle, Ted. Important things. Particularly about us.
I understand.